back to the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast, a Fan Nation show brought to you weekly by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and I'm joined by a familiar face. Tori, welcome back. Thanks for joining me again. Aren't you getting tired of being on here and talking to me?
No. Any chance to talk football, especially college football, is a good time.
Yeah, it is. And we are previewing another one of TCU's games. We got week five on tap. God, is it really already week five? The season just started. Give me some more time with this. Mm-hmm. It is the shortest season of all the big sport leagues here in the U.S. So we're enjoying the time while we have it. But TCU takes on the West Virginia Mountaineers this week, and that is what we're going to be previewing. Do you have any passing thoughts about last week's win as TCU took home the Iron Skillet?
I thought that was the most complete game TCU has played all season. You didn't have nearly as many miscues. Special teams looked pretty buttoned up, because that was the big concern for me after Houston. That was very buttoned up. Defense made a lot of plays. The offense still had some points left on the field and some things like that. But, you know, you felt like the offense was starting to figure some things out. Moore started to connect with his receivers better. I don't know. You felt like things were coming together against SMU.
Yeah, and TCU moves to 3-1. Arguably mm-hmm. could be 4-0 if you played that Colorado game maybe 10 times over. TCU's 4-0 more often than not. But hey, I'm not going to argue with 3-1. Pretty good start to the season here. And they take on West Virginia, who also is 3-1, contrary to what I would have believed that they would have been at this point. Yep. And before we get into the offensive and defensive matchups here, I have to say, West Virginia is well outplaying those expectations we had. I thought preseason, I actually made my call that Neil Brown would probably coach his last game against TCU here as Mountaineers go into their bye week next week. But that certainly isn't the case after a 3-1 start with two wins in league here over, I'm sorry, just one. They beat Texas Tech. But hey, I didn't see that coming, to be honest here.
Nope.
But I'm going to put a very, very, very big butt in here, and I'm sorry for any West Virginia fans that are listening to this. They beat up on a Pitt team that I think has the potential to be very bad. Did not expect that going into the game, but the more I watch this Pitt team and Phil Dracovic, they're dreadful. Like, bottom of the ACC, bottom of the barrel, really bad. And Texas Tech lost their starting quarterback after the first quarter. So to be honest, 3-1's a little bit lucky. I think a little bit fortunate here. When they played a real team, Penn State, they were thoroughly dominated. I'm going to put the word out there. I don't use this one lightly, but I think West Virginia's a bit fraudulent. What say you?
I would agree, especially once you start diving into the numbers. And I know we'll touch on a lot of that, but once you start diving into the numbers, this 3-1 unravels pretty quickly. They're only averaging, I believe, like 17 points a game versus FCS opponents.
Yeah, it's one not of those great. Wins
was, yeah, or I'm sorry, FBS, because one of those wins came against the FCS opponent. So you're not even putting up 20 points a game versus FBS opponents. Now, the defense is very good, but man, that offense, it struggles. The passer rating is low. The two quarterbacks are not even completing 60% of their passes. Like, it's just, I agree. And like you said, it's not where you say lightly, but I agree, it's fraudulent. It's going to unravel, I think.
And to be fair, when I say fraudulent, I don't mean that this team is no good, and I'm not saying that they won't even make a bowl game. If you look at, they're here at TCU this week, they have a bye week, then they're at Houston, very winnable game, I think. Mm-hmm. Houston's not very good. Then they host Oklahoma State, who's an absolute dumpster fire right now, so that's a winnable game. Newcomer UCF, that's on the road. UCF's pretty good, but who knows? Then they play BYU, they play all the newcomers here, at Oklahoma, Cincinnati, and at Baylor. There's a lot of winnable games on the schedule, and West Virginia absolutely could find themselves bowling, and not just bowling, but maybe even 7-5, knocking on the door of 8-4. But when they go into a bowl game and they play a higher level ACC team or a top level Group of Five team, I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be calling their bluff in that time. But again, we'll have to get there first. We're getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves. But do you see this success continuing? Because I do, but only in the terms of wins and losses, which I guess at the end of the day is the only thing that matters.
Right. I think I do because of the reason you mentioned is that their schedule is not super difficult. They avoid Texas. They avoid both Kansas schools, which arguably are the three best in the conference. I believe Oklahoma is on their schedule.
Yes.
That's probably going to be a loss. But they avoid the three toughest schools So it's like, I think they have a path to get to a bowl game. But like you said, I don't think they're going to be as great as their record might indicate.
No, definitely not. Playing all four newcomers in the second half of their schedule, two dumpster fires, and then Oklahoma. That's pretty much what they have after this bye week here. So, yeah, West Virginia fans, enjoy those wins. Mm-hmm. Now, you may be hanging on to Neil Brown a little bit longer than you may have suspected or wanted. So, you know, root for many wins at your own peril. But I get it. Winning's better than losing. At the end of the day, they're probably going to have a winning record, and good for them. They're fortunate to be there, and that, you know, it kind of comes down to this game. And when I handicap this game and scout it out and all those things, I do keep in mind that this isn't just your average 3-1 West Virginia team coming in. This is a team that is severely playing above expectation. So I do want to start with TCU's defense against West Virginia's offense. West Virginia, they run the ball 67% of plays. That is the second most nationally behind the or among the non-service academy teams. I tend to remove those from competition because they play such – I mean, they're playing a different sport than all the other FBS teams here. So second most, not including the three service academies. CJ Donaldson, he's a familiar name. He is most of the offense. He's a tight end converted to tailback. He's a big boy, 240 pounds, 6'1". He runs with purpose. He runs with aggression. Not somebody I would personally want to get in the way of on a football field. Starting quarterback Garrett Green did not play last week as West Virginia upset Texas Tech. Backup Nico Markiel, he's more of a dual threat guy, way better with his legs and his arms. Goodness gracious, he had 3.7 yards per attempt in a win over Texas Tech, but he added 72 yards on the ground. So he's an effective player, but Tori, he's not a good passer. he's just not.
No, when you look at those passing numbers, even for Garrett Green, I believe he played in three of the games, went out in the Pitt game, even his numbers are not great. So yeah, it's interesting to realize how much they're relying on that run game to get going, which historically West Virginia has pretty good lines. So that's not usually an issue. But how long can you rely on one aspect of the offense for sustained success?
Yeah. And while the quarterbacks aren't great in their own right, they're not terrible. They're not detrimental. None of those things, not a ton of turnovers and turnover worthy throws, right. But they just have nobody to throw to. The wide receiver core may be the worst in the Big 12. I say that a little ignorantly, just off the top of my head there, but it's not great. He doesn't have a lot of options, and that's why we're seeing, like you said, 17 points a game against FBS competition. Not ideal. You did mention the offensive line. It's very good. Zach Frazier is an All-American player on that line there. They should be able to get a push. They've been able to get a decent push in there. But like you said, what are they going to do when the other team starts scoring more points? You know, they have to turn to the pass game, and I don't know if they can do that. But even with the below-average schedule, so far we're talking, like I said, Pitt, potentially be very, very, very bad. I mean, like 3-win bad. We're talking Texas Tech, lost their starting quarterback, has not been up to expectation this year. West Virginia is still 97th nationally in points per drive. I like to look at points per drive rather than points per game, because points per game doesn't factor out the fact that you're scoring late in garbage time and pick sixes and things like that. Points per drive is a much more efficiency. How often when you have the football do you put the ball in the end zone versus kicking field goals versus coming up empty? So I do like looking at that more, and they're currently 97th in scoring. Now, thanks to TCU's pace of play, they do take away opponents' ability to just run the football, run the daylights out of football. You're going to fall behind because TCU runs so darn fast that if you're not keeping up that pace, you are going to start falling behind and fast. Do you have any concern at all about West Virginia being able to slow this game down and controlling the pace and kind of running things at their speed?
Maybe early, like in that first half when both teams are trying to kind of establish what they want to do, imprint their identity on the game. I think that's where if things could turn in West Virginia's favor, I feel like that's a really good opportunity is early in the game where you know they're going to run the ball and they're going to just try and ground and pound things. So on the flip side, TCU that's their opportunity to say, nope, we're going to pass, but maybe we'll run the ball a little bit too to keep it out of your hands. And I know we'll dive into the offense here a little bit, but I think my concern would come, do you let them establish the run early? That's where I think it's going to be is what are you doing in the first and second quarters as far as what, you know, letting them establish what they want to do.
Yeah. And I just brought up their game against Texas Tech. because Texas Tech runs the fastest pace in the nation, 19.8 seconds per play. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out. I try not to do that on this podcast. I know people's eyes glaze over. I'm very statistics minded, but do keep in mind, I do watch the games too. But Texas Tech runs the fastest pace in the country, and they're still able to get 81 plays off from scrimmage against West Virginia. So they were still running at their clip. They just weren't very successful with it. But West Virginia was not able to control the pace of that game, which leads me to believe that TCU, who is fifth nationally with 21 and a half seconds per play, blistering pace, that they're not going to be able to control the pace on this side too, just to, you know, up front. I just don't think they're going to turn this into a rock fight because they weren't able to against Texas Tech, who's marginally worse offensively without their starting quarterback. But at what point of this game do you start to worry? I know I ask this question a lot, but I always think it brings out interesting answers. At what point in this game do you start to worry about how TCU's defense is holding up against that run?
I wouldn't be too concerned early because I think it's just kind of one of those things. They're going to break off a big run early. Now, how big a run? You know, can you keep it to 20 yards as opposed to an 80-yard touchdown? That's a big difference. I think I would get really concerned if during that second quarter, and especially at the start of the first half, after you've had an opportunity to make some adjustments, make decisions, if they're still able to run the ball very effectively in that third quarter, that's where I'm going to have some concerns. After the SMU win, Sonny Dykes talked about the importance of the physicality of the offensive and defensive lines and how that kind of helped turn the tide and set the tone in that second half. And I think that's got to be a similar, looking for something similar here, is they're going to feel each other out in the first half, and then whoever can kind of set the tone in the second half is going to control that run game.
Can I be overly specific about the point that I would be worried? And it may come across as like, yeah, overly specific, but when TCU's up 14-7 or when TCU's up 10-3, are they able to force a three and out, or are they able to force a punt in West Virginia's own territory? Or is West Virginia able to first down with CJ Donaldson, with that backfield, and be able to run and move the football? That's when I'd be worried. When you're nursing a one score, potentially a 10-point lead, can you get them off the field? Because if you can't, that gets into the territory of how I like to say letting teams hang around. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, the biggest reason that better teams lose to less talented teams is because they let them hang around, and then an opportune turnover or a change of possession at the half all of a sudden flips the entire script of this game. And now a team that you should be beating soundly is hanging around, and you find yourself in a 6-point rock fight with 6 minutes left and the other team has the football, and then it's sweaty palms time. So I think I'd like to see if they're up a score or 10 points, keeping it within reason, are they able to force the Mountaineers off the field? If not, I am worried about that defense. Fortunately, the defense has been pretty good outside of that Colorado game, especially holding SMU to 17 points. Not bad. I do like what I've seen from them so far. But thoughts on that at all?
No, I agree. And I think that's a very good point, is if you're up a score, can you get the ball back to your offense? And yeah, you want your offense to score and extend a lead, but even if the offense can't score, if they're able to take more time off the clock and just put more pressure on West Virginia, I think that's really important. So I think that's an interesting way to look at it too, is situational as opposed to, you know, kind of more what I was looking at, which was specific point in the game. But I do think that's really important as well, to see if they can get West Virginia off the field.
I could be wrong about this, and watch me be proven like absolutely wrong on it, but I think a 2-score lead in the second half is insurmountable for West Virginia at this point. Of the football team that they are, the pace that they run, the style of offense that they are successful with, and their inability to really push the ball downfield through the air, I really do think a 14-17 point lead in the second half is probably it. So can you get to that? Obviously, a 14-point lead going into the half where you give the ball back to them is not enough. But if you can get that 20-point lead in the first half, and I know that's a big lead, but hey, 3 scores and 3 three-and-outs will do it. Mm-hmm. I think that is truly insurmountable for West Virginia in the style of football they play right now. So obviously the goal is to score as many points as you can. But it, you know, if I'm calling the offense here, if I'm you know, the offense coordinator for TCU, and I can get it, I know his name, I know it's Kendall Briles, but I did not want to put the words "if I were Kendall Briles" out on audio for people to hear. So if I were calling the plays for TCU, my goal would be get that 14-point lead and then maintain it, or get that 20-point lead and then maintain it. And I'm very anti-conservative football. I don't think that wins football games when you play not to lose versus to win. You lose a lot more games than you'd like. But if you can get that kind of lead on this team's offense, I believe that they're absolutely hapless, cannot catch up, and that's the point where then I would just be running timeout. But I guess that was a pretty seamless transition into TCU's offense against West Virginia's defense. That was absolutely unintentional. I was just going on a rant there. But if you're looking at the Mountaineers, they're actually really stout against the run. They held Penn State's backfield to about 5 yards a carry, which if you're getting 5 yards a carry on your offense, you're pretty happy with it. But if you're holding a team of Penn State's caliber, especially with their backfield and offensive line, to 5 yards a carry, that's a pretty successful day, especially when you get blown out 38-15. I guess it should have really been 31-7 if both coaches didn't decide to mess around at the end of that game there. But Imani Bailey, he continues to be the dominant force on this offense. He continues to be the conversation and, in my estimation, the best player overall on TCU's offense. He's forced 31 missed tackles. That is the third most nationally. And one of those players, Audric Estime of Notre Dame, has played one more game than him. So we're talking about the second most forced missed tackles among running backs that have played four games so far. He's picked up 120 plus yards on the ground against every FBS opponent, AKA when he's needed. Against Nichols, didn't really need him that much. So they didn't run him that much and he didn't hit his 120. But in all the games that he's needed to be a force, he's picked up 120 plus on the ground. TCU, though, their wide receiver core, they've got a little bit of a drop problem. They have 11 drops on the season. That is sixth most. Chandler Morris, without those drops, would be top 20 in completion rate, 79% adjusted completion. That takes out drops. That takes out throwaways. So that's what adjusted completion rate is there. He's completing almost 80% of his intended passes if you take out the drops. So need to clean it up there, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot turn the ball over or miss opportunities against West Virginia on offense, especially early. If you dig yourself in a 7-0 lead, that's going to change the calculus of the game versus if you take a 7-0 lead yourself, right? So, you know, West Virginia, they're going to want to slow the game down. They're going to want to limit the number of TCU's drives. And when you get your drives limited, that makes the game closer than it needs to be. And like I said, you let teams hang around. So I need to see it early and often with Imani Bailey. I need to see no drops. We don't need turnovers, none of that kind of stuff. Play a clean game and get out of there with the victory. In your opinion, has TCU looked more prepared against their other FBS opponents? Because I know I was livid about their unpreparedness against Colorado.
No, I think they've looked a lot more prepared against SMU in particular, and then Houston as well. And I think part of why they looked unprepared against Colorado was there was absolutely no game tape. That's not to say you can't prepare and you can't pull stuff from what those coordinators have done at their past stops, but it's really hard to prepare when you have zero tape. So I think that was part of the equation there. That's a hard comparison, but I do think they've looked a lot better against Houston and SMU. Execution might not be perfect every single time, but I do feel like they are starting to figure out who they are. They're using Imani Bailey more. Like you talked about, he's averaging 120 yards a game. And I was looking at this the other day. That's almost, it's 15 yards more than the next back in the Big 12. I mean, there's a huge gap between him and Kansas State's running back. Now, I don't know if he's truly better than him or not. That's a maybe a little bit, different argument. But
I would say so. DJ Giddens is a great player, but I would say Imani Bailey is the best one in the Big 12 right now.
He probably is. And his stats are absolutely showing that. And so I think they're not afraid to rely on him, which I think is really important. And you saw that in the SMU game, because at halftime there was no run game. There was absolutely no run game for TCU. They made some adjustments, went back to it, and we all know how that ended. So I think they've looked a lot more prepared, and I think that's going to continue into this game. I really do.
I do understand, and it absolutely is a reason that, you know, there wasn't the tape out on Colorado beforehand, so it's kind of hard to prepare. But I think the biggest concern to me was that Gillespie's guys looked surprised that this team was running fast. Not even, are you prepared for Dylan Edwards running the wheel route down the field? Sure. I mean, Dylan Edwards, he's a freshman. You have no tape on him. You don't know what he's capable of. I get it. That's fine. But being surprised that a team with no size on the offensive line was running fast and getting to the perimeter and using their best players to me was shocking. That, and not even a halftime adjustment was enough to make up for that. It's almost like they're like, wow, well, we expect a Colorado to come out here and run 47 plays, and here they go running 90. I don't know. That's a whole nother rabbit hole. I could do a whole podcast on that. Do you have any concern that's still remaining about game planning?
At this point in particular, I think we'll start to see a little bit more of that come out as conference play continues, because against Houston, you didn't really have to pull out all the stops. You didn't have to do a ton because you started to pull away. Same thing with SMU. Sure, it's a 17-point game, but it started to feel a little bit more like a blowout, like TCU should have been up more at a certain point. So I think until I see them back in a tight game like against Colorado, I don't have too many concerns about the game planning, but it's something definitely to keep an eye on, especially if they have an opportunity to go up two scores or something like that against West Virginia and they don't do it. Well, why didn't they do it? What prevented them from doing that?
And I didn't talk too much about personnel here, but I do just kind of want to touch on the secondary for West Virginia. I know the competition they play, but guys, this is a good unit. They have two penalties between the likes of them, which in this day and age is that's tough to do. None of them are allowing greater than a 50% completion when targeted. They've got four picks as a team, several more pass breakups. The highest NFL QBR that they've allowed is 86. Mind you, it goes up to 158.3. So this is a tough unit. And I like TCU's skill guys, but I don't think that their receivers are good enough to be able to get enough separation against these guys to make things easy for Chandler Morris. He's going to need to be throwing balls in a tough windows, tight windows. I know we found the tight ends for a couple of touchdowns last week. Maybe they'll have to go to that route again. But you're not going to roll over against these guys. Beanie Bishop is one of the better cornerbacks in my estimation in the Big 12. So they're going to have their hands full. We need to see separation from these guys, especially downfield. Give Chandler Morris some easy throws early on. Let's not try to make this harder than it needs to be and run the ball with Amani Bailey. And I think TCU will be just fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's your winner in this game between TCU and West Virginia? And what score are you giving them?
I am going to go TCU 24, West Virginia 10. Like we talked about, I don't see West Virginia scoring a lot of points unless TCU gives them opportunities. Unless there's a strip sack, fumble return for a touchdown, or a pick six, or some of those more opportunistic plays, I don't see West Virginia scoring that much. I really don't. And so on the flip side, TCU's got to take advantage of those opportunities when they have them to move that ball down the field, maybe take some time off the clock. Because with the new clock rules, there's a limited number of drives. Teams are already seeing that they have less drives, one less drive, two less drives, whatever it is, and that matters, especially in close games. So I think TCU should be able to move that ball. Morris is going to have to be on point with his passes, and he showed that a little bit against SMU that he can do that. So I think TCU is going to be able to move the ball too.
I'm in such lockstep with you that my score prediction is TCU 31, West Virginia 10. I don't believe West Virginia is going to be able to score the ball that much at all. TCU's linebackers are too good and sure tackling, and they're a good swarm to the ball kind of defense. When there's a team that's rushing the football, I think they'll be able to take this out, put the ball in either Garrett Green or Nico Markiel's hands, whoever does step out there on Saturday. I'm actually not sure who it's going to be right now. Either way, force them to throw it, force their quarterbacks to make plays, and I think you're going to be just fine. But before we wrap up shop here, going back to the pick'ems. I went a perfect 5-0 last week. Pat myself on the back after starting 8-9. Tori, you went 3-2. Not bad. You were at 6-3 on the season. So that's pretty solid, I think. I got four more games for you. We are including the TCU West Virginia game in here. But the first game that we're starting off with is called the Southwest Classic. It's between Texas A&M and Arkansas, played at AT&T Stadium in Arlington.
I think I'm going to go with A&M here. I've really been impressed by their quarterback play. I know he got hurt against, I'm blanking on who they played last week.
Auburn.
I haven't heard he's out.
He's out for the season. That is a development this afternoon.
That is a huge loss for A&M because he was He looked very good against Miami in that loss. I think I still like A&M. I feel like they've just got a few more things rolling in the right direction. Arkansas just, they just don't feel like they're clicking, they're taking off. They didn't look great against BYU. I'm going to go with Texas A&M.
I'm with you. I don't think Arkansas is very good. Offensive coordinator Dan Enos doesn't do it for me. Their defense is good enough to make up for that. So, yeah, give me A&M, even with Max Johnson, who's journeyman. He's a veteran. Solid. He's decent. He's a lefty, though, that has a ridiculous windup. So against a better secondary, that may be an issue, but I don't think Arkansas is the team to exploit that. Here's a fun one. The ranked Kansas Jayhawks, number 24 Kansas, on the road at number 3 Texas. Who are you taking to win?
I'm going to take Texas. I think they have the better talent. It's in Austin. I think that's going to matter. But, man, I think this is going to be a close game. It's going to be a good game. Like, I think it's going to be tight. It's going to be a fun one to watch, but I'm going to ultimately pick Texas.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I know they played Alabama, but I think Kansas is probably the best offense that Texas has played this year. Certainly the best quarterback play that they played all year. They have the look ahead to the Red River Shootout. That's next week. They may be looking ahead. That said, I don't think that there's a number that Texas cannot score on this Kansas team. I know defensively mm-hmm. they've taken a little bit of a step forward, but I don't think that Kansas can do anything about their downfield passing. And Texas isn't going to overlook them because they've lost them recently, you know, in Austin. So I think that this is a game they're going to take seriously. Maybe a sluggish start in the first half, but I think ultimately Texas puts this one away and wins comfortably. Now we have College Game Day heading to Duke for the first time ever. There are now just 6 Power 5 teams that have not hosted College Game Day, as Duke is being written off here. They're hosting number 11 Notre Dame. Who do you have winning this one?
I'm going to go with Notre Dame, mainly because they know they let one slip through last week against Ohio State. They're going to be motivated. They're going to be, I mean, it was one of those things, whoever's on their schedule next is just going to be unfortunate. You know, not to say that they're going to just demolish them. I think it'll be a pretty good game. But, man, Notre Dame let one slip through their fingers. So I think they're going to be pretty motivated. But Duke's looked pretty good. Beat Clemson. They're rolling as well. So I think it should be a pretty good game.
I'm very interested to see how Notre Dame responds. On one hand, yeah, it could be I'd hate to be the next guys on their schedule. The other part of me thinks that it was such an emotional loss and body blow after body blow. Now they have to hit the road and play a Duke team that is going to be amped up beyond belief. That stadium is going to be juiced as it's ever been mm-hmm. in its history. And we saw what happened. I know the 28-7 final score was not indicative of how that game went. Clemson probably should have won that game. Weird to say. But we saw how energized that team, how Mike Elko gets his guys up for it, and how a full Wallace Wade Stadium can actually be pretty impressive. So I'm going to say Notre Dame. I'm actually not very confident in it. I think this will go one of two ways. I either think Notre Dame will blow the doors off them and make it a very sound, obvious win, or Duke wins this game outright because Notre Dame just can't get their footing after that emotional loss in week 4. Final one on here, had to do it. I know you love your Boise State Broncos, Tori, so I put Boise State on here. They travel to Memphis as underdogs. Who are you taking to win?
Take my Broncos. I'm going to go with Boise State. They got a really nice road win to open conference play against San Diego State. That's not an easy place mm-hmm. to play. They kind of struggled a little bit in the non-conference, figuring some things out, almost beat UCF. So I think they're kind of starting to figure some things out. Their quarterback, Green, is looking a little bit better. So I'm going to roll with the Broncos.
Ashton Jeantie might be my favorite player in college football right now. He's so good. That running back, he's broken 1,000,000,000 tackles. He's versatile. I like him a lot. I do not trust Memphis. As far as I can throw them, Ryan Silverfield has lost 8 of his last 11 one-score games. He did win that Navy game. Probably shouldn't have on multiple occasions watching that. That was one of the more ridiculous football games I think I've ever seen in my life. So I'm going to take Boise State on the road. You know, it's a long trip out to Memphis, but hey, I think the Broncos are more talented, much better coached. Memphis can be an absolute clown car if they're not firing on all cylinders under Ryan Silverfield. But thank you so much for tuning in for another Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. Find us at killerfrogs.com or on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it these days, at Killer Frogs. I am at Road to CFB, and you can find Tori at Tori Couch _TX. and continue this conversation over on Facebook. Give us your West Virginia TCU score predictions. If this finds its way to West Virginia Facebook or social media, I'm sorry, you can yell at me in the comments there. I probably won't read them, though, as we go into this week, because I know it's coming for me. But if you liked what you heard, subscribe to us on your podcasting app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you're using these days. And drop us a review, as that's going to be the best way to help us grow and reach more college football fans, Big 12 fans, and TCU fans. Check back next week for the next episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I'm Brett Givens. That is Tori Couch. And we'll catch you all next time.